AlchemyPod is a RamsDigital.com sponsored podcast.
To the reader. With the production of the present work, The Golden Chain of Homer, the restorers of Alchemical Manuscripts Society may have accomplished their magnum opus. As will be discovered by the reader, many different versions of this book have been published. This includes the Rams production of An Excerptation by Dr. Zygmunt Bäckström, which was released several years ago. The present work reflects the full text of the work edited by Anton Kirchwiger. This author reveals that he was a member of a secret hermetic order, that one of the brothers of the order, Homerus, an alchemical adept, set down the basics of this work. Whatever the true origin of this book, no one will doubt that it is indeed a masterpiece of alchemical literature. Written in down-to-earth language, one can begin to understand alchemical principles and thus unveil the mysteries that shroud the holy science of alchemy. The footnotes alone form a compendium of data that is of enormous value. It may be of interest to the reader to be aware of a question asked by the Rams producer of one recognized as an alchemical master. The question was, if your house was on fire and you could save only one book from your library, which one would you save? The alchemical teacher, for so he was, smiled a secret smile and replied, well, it would be The Golden Chain of Homer. Pressing this point, the producer then asked, is this then the most important book of alchemy, or at least one of the most important books? The teacher looked away for a moment, reflecting, and answered, yes, if you can understand it. So, courteous reader, you have in your hands a book deemed by those who know as being very important, and so it is. More germane, you will find it to be immensely understandable. To give the reader some idea of the effort that went into this book, recognize that 8 people put in an effort spanning over 2 years. It is fitting, then, that we thank those involved. Firstly, Leon Muller, who single-handedly translated almost 600 pages of archaic German text into English. We owe her much. Also, Kevin Massman and Daniel Dulliers, 2 practicing alchemists in Australia. They did a tedious and masterful job of ensuring no alchemical sense was lost. Their comment and editing made a fantastic book come to life. Typists Judy Hopskind and Mary Roberts got the final version going. Jody Nitzel contributed most of the illustrations, while David Hamm labored with the symbols and proofreading. Final typing, editing, symbology, and production was done by Hans Nitzel, with help from some folks who wished to remain anonymous. To all, we applaud your mighty efforts done as a labor of love. Thank you. Now, dearest reader, you will embark on a fantastic alchemical journey. Recognize, though, as Gerard Dorn wisely noted, the theory is dry without the practice. Doing the laboratory work will thoroughly ingrain the theory and make it live within and without you. Enjoy. Hans Nitzel. A word about Rams. Rams, the Restoration of Alchemical Manuscript Society, is a very loosely knit group composed of private citizens around the world who have contributed to the present work and others in one way or another. The goal of the Society is to seek out and obtain copies of alchemical manuscripts, tracts, printed works, and other such materials and literature. From these, certain items are selected for restoration. This consists of retyping the material to render it readable, therefore usable. The reading is made more enjoyable by the use of charts, symbols, dictionaries, diagrams, insertions of printed illustrations and other annotations to shed additional light on the text. RAMS is a not-for-profit organization with members from all walks of life. There is no organization per se, just individuals desirous of performing a labor of love. It is their hope that this effort will perhaps result in renewed interest in the science of alchemy, or even contribute to new discoveries or fields of experimentation. While this material is for all on the path of alchemy, it is particularly for the sincere practicing alchemist. The transcription of this material is as verbatim as human skills permit. The only exceptions are to make the matter more readable or understandable with some modernization. This is done only where it is judged that no ambiguity will arise from a slight departure from the original, and there is no danger of deleting any keywords or phrases where a possible use of gematria, timulia, notaquon, or other forms of written code exists. Thus, misspelled or grammatically incorrect material is to be found, as well as archaic or strange words. This is an effort to maintain the original text as far as possible. The completed material is then produced, sometimes bound, and offered to interested parties. The cost for these copies are used to defray production costs and to obtain additional material for restoration. The work of RAMS includes such material as The Last Will and Testament of Basil Valentine, important selections from the invaluable Backstrom manuscripts, such as The Golden Chain of Homer, Lambsbrigg's process for the lapis sulphorum, The Chemist's Key, the mineral gluten of nitre and sulphur, Colmfell's sulphorum, and others. Additional material by other writers is or will be offered, such as Gerber, Khaled, Ripley, Bacon, Hazelrig, etc. It is highly appropriate to acknowledge the many persons that have either materially or philosophically contributed to the present effort and future ones. For some, this might be the first indication that they are considered as members of RAMS, or that such a group even exists. While the list is long, it includes C. Collins, Rick Stern, Doris Edlian, Apgu, D.N.G. Nitzel, N. Ogle, G. Price, F. Rigardi, W. Van Doren, K. Van Kolnigsek, and particularly David Ham. For their labours and contribution, grateful thanks are given. Let their unselfish efforts inspire others to light the fires of alchemy. To obtain copies of this material, or to contribute in some way to this work, contact RAMS. Preface. The Aurea Cantina Homeri, Goldenum Kitten Homerus, is a famous book, or better, was a famous book, because today it is forgotten and buried under the dust of hundreds of years in our libraries. In the past, however, an unaccountable number of people have read and studied it, even the best of that time, like Goethe, for example, gained an array of inspiring thoughts from the Annulus Platonis, Ring des Plato, as the work is also entitled. From the sky it comes, to the sky it rises, and down again to earth it must come, eternally changing. That is the quintessence of the Superus et Infernius Hermetis, Oberon and Unteron des Hermes, as the work is also entitled. Thirdly, the idea that all creation, no matter what its nature, is most closely chained together and interconnected, that a deeply secret connection pervades all of nature, that one thing relates to the next and things depend on each other, as well as the idea that this secret connection appears in the form of an up and down, a way to and a way back, in the form of an almost changing circulation. This possibly fantastic double idea was what Goethe, as he once called himself, liked best in the Aurea Cantina Homeri. And this same grand natural philosophic idea was also the one that captivated another large circle of readers of this book for a whole century. Today, as mentioned earlier, the book itself is long forgotten, even if its content is still lingering in all of us. Only he who concerns himself in the art of the Hermetics will occasionally run across this jewel and this philosophical Garfunkelstein will enlighten the Hermetic darkness, and only an artist will not give up, but persevere through the work once, twice, three times. The door is always open. Go into the room, my friend. And actually, he who enters the palace of this book and gives it more than a passing glance will finally pass through all doors and reach the bed of the naked queen. He will also encounter the natural king who checks the heart and kidneys. And both of them, king and queen, will reveal to him the secret of the time in which the chain originated. The spirit, as a seed, will enable the comprehension of other mystical alchemical writings. So I begin and present you, honorable brother, with a work which, because of its eternal value, and because it has been mutilated in various ways by many authors from the past, and more recently, precisely and clearly, with explanations of the theory as well as the practical explanations, a work which is considered a classic schoolbook by our elders, and which has become a requirement especially for the students of the lower grades in order to create a basis for the receptive science. That is what the preface of the Rosenkreuzer edition of the Aurea Cantina Homeri in 1781 is saying, and even if we cannot present the complete work word by word here, we would like, by the way, without agreeing to all, especially not the details, to let the spirit of truth and power of conviction come back to life, with which it has been written approximately 200 years ago. It might cause this or that follower of Hermetics to read the original itself. He will then realize just how much enlightenment the immense progress of 2 centuries has contributed to the answering of specific questions, and how little in comparison to the solution of general world and human enigmas. As far as those are concerned, we are as smart as we were before. In any case, we have no reason to look down disdainfully on the author of an Aurea Cantata Homeri. Introduction. Concerning the several authors and various editions of the Golden Chain of Homer. The identity of the author of the Aurea Cantina Homeri, which was first printed in 1723, but which prior to that had been distributed in a handwritten version, has been unknown for a long time. Unknown among the profane ones. The informed ones knew, however. One of these informed people was Rudolf Johann Friedrich Schmidt, born in 1702 in Celle, and who died in 1761 in Copenhagen. He was a doctor medico, a general practitioner and alchemist in Habsburg, and Hofrat counselor of Darmstadt Hessen. This Hofrat Schmidt, who did not receive sufficient acknowledgement from the historians of alchemy, and about whom soon a major work based on some studies will be published, led all his intensive heritage in the form of manuscripts, alchemic and medical books to the library of the city of Habsburg in his testament. Among his books is also the Aurea Cantina Homeri, the Leipzig edition in 1738. Schmidt was very knowledgeable of the Golden Chain, which had a strong influence on him, as can be seen in his work entitled Enchiridion Alchemico-Physico et Disquisico de Menstrui Universalibus Vel Lucuribus Alcahestinus Philosophorum, 1739. He had the habit of making remarks on the margins of his favourite books, which proved to be very valuable to us now. Also, his pocket edition of the Aurea Cantina Homeri was marked completely in this matter, and on the page of the preface it had the following remark: Dr. Kurtwiger Stieris, National pro Autori Centene ori Homeri S. Confusus Est. There was probably no bibliographic researcher who could have been more pleased about this remark as Smit dating from 1738 or 1739, that Hermann Kopp, the deserving historian writer of alchemy. Kopp, as a matter of fact, in his own Aurea Cantina Homeri, 1880, arrived at the same conclusion, namely that the Dr. Anton Joseph Kurtwiger Fahrenbruch, dead on February 8, 1746, in Gumden in Upper Austria, counsellor and court physician of the region of Salzkammergut, Austria, was the author. Kopp concluded this from, among other things, a manuscript catalogue that was published in Vienna only in 1786. There is still another book by the same Kurtwiger, Microscopum Basili Valentini, Berlin, 1790, in which he refers over a dozen times to his Aurea Cantina. The same holds true with his third manuscript, Ars Sinus Us Siu Pandora Redux. The latter, however, remains completely unknown to all Hermetic literature historians. The Aurea Cantina Homeri consists of two parts. Latter editions have had a third part added, De Transmutations Metorum, but since that one is probably not by Kurtwiger, we will not consider it here, even though its author assures us that he will find a much brighter light in this third part than in the first two parts. The first edition of the Aurea Cantina Homeri was published in 1723, anonymously under the title Aurea Cantina Homeri, or A Description of the Origin of Nature and Natural Things, How and Out of What They Are Born and Created, and How They Are Destroyed into Their Original Kind, Independent of What the Thing Is, which gives birth and destructions again, according to nature's own instructions and order, shown in the most simple way and illustrated with its most beautiful rationale and causes throughout. If you don't understand what is earthen, how do you understand what is heavenly? Frankfurt and Leipzig, publisher Johann Boehm, 1723. Of this 1723 version, there are two editions which, according to Kopp, only differ in the initials and other ornamentations. Then follows these editions: 1728, 1738, 1754, 1757, 1759, 1762, 1763, 1771, 1781. The last published 1781 Rosenkreuzer edition has this title: Annales Platonis, or Physical Chemical Explanation of Nature After Its Creation, Maintenance, and Destruction, newly improved by a Society of True Natural Scientists and amplified with many important remarks, Berlin and Leipzig, published George Jacob Decker, 1781. The preface, signed Flebrochrom, is followed by the listing of the chapter, and it is preceded by one, an illustration, plus a poetic explanation of the figure absi duplicator, or the twice volatile and fixed abyss. 2. An illustration of the catena, plus poetic explanation of the annali Platonis, or the golden chain of Homer. 3. A remark. We do not show a copy of the two camina here, because even though they contain nothing different than the book itself, it would become a tremendous effort to try to make everybody understand their trinket format, rich in artificial words. Contrary to that, the remark says, this Platonic ring is clearly and completely explained in the rhymes following below, and in the whole work itself. It seems as if Plato borrowed the latter from the natural science of Pythagoras, which, except for some terrible tenets of his successors, and which certainly are not those of Pythagoras, are in accordance with the Mosaic and Hermetic philosophy. Robert Fludd and Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa, the two very famous philosophers, except for a few crazy sentences, showed that very nicely. The latter's three books of the hidden philosophy, De Philosophia Occulta, are very good and were considered worthy to be translated into French. They contain an explanation and an elaboration on Pythagoras' philosophy and the Kabbalah. His main statement says that in nature exists a certain connection and a common pull of hidden forces which causes that an upper force through its lower magnets continuously shoot off its rays extending to the farthest creature, whereas the lowest also in increasing degree swings upward through a consistent force. Therefore the real magus is the one who sees the things in front of the eyes, as though magnets with which to attract the hidden force. The preface itself names an author, a certain Herwood of Forschenbrunn, medical teacher in Cromer, and rural doctor in Marenne, also a deserving member of our secret brotherhood, in which he took on the name Homerus, erroneously, or at least inexactly. If there were really Rosencrucer with the brotherhood name of Homerus, cannot be determined with accuracy. The Aurea Cantina, however, did not get its name from either such a brother or from the known Greek poet Homer. The addition of Homeri to the Aurea Cantina results, however, from the fact that in Homer and since Homer, the golden chain was considered the symbol of the chain that connects nature within itself. The rings of Plato constitute such a symbol. A certain analogue to the chain of Homer and the rings of Plato are the circles Schurin von Prevost. The latter refer, however, primarily to an inner spiritual world of looking from which they are then transferred to the outer, visible, natural world. The interior world and the outside world exist not only each separately, but also each connected to the other in an orderly fashion, and in a bilateral connection, since they are basically only one world. Nothing can be recognized in an isolated form, but each thing only should be seen within its connection and its relation with other things. Lassalle once formulated this very accurately. It is one of the most profound philosophical ideas ever expressed, that nothing is known for itself, but everything is known only within its organic relation with its where from and where to in the natural and spiritual universe, i.e. it may be understood only in relation with the whole or absolute truth. We would like to cite the following from the preface. The author shows in this work, beyond doubt, the real origin of all things in the so described general spirit of the world that the modernist hates so much, that he who does not applaud to these enlightened rules is basking in his own blindness. For the most flexible, inquisitive-minded, however, the light will come to shine to which he would be looking in vain in other philosophic literature. For marvelously as the past has taught us, most of the philosophers contradict each other in their various systems. Many modern philosophers are not concerned with the spiritual nature of things, but try to explain everything according to the laws of mechanical movement. That is why most of them stay with the artificial nature. Others, however, who have realized that there is no basis for this, instead of giving up the prejudices which they have held since childhood and of becoming enhanced with the truth, prefer to stay with the most tasteless scholastic melancholy. Each and every thing, says Homerus himself, is nothing but just this general world spirit in a more or less coagulated or firm condition. But more about this at a later time. The true natural science, as promulgated in the Aurea Cantina Homeri, is in nunce, also contained in the famous Tabulus Maragdina. In the preface it is stated, our three times grander Hermes, Trismegistus, in his Smorgadin Tafel table, which we rightfully consider the most elegant of our philosophical symbolic books, and at the same time as a Bible of the Hermetic philosophy, has presented the mentioned system of true natural science in such a small extent, however, in such a thorough and intuitive manner, that he agrees even in detail with those infallible rules of the most splendid of all natural philosophers who ever lived on earth. I am referring to Moses. That is why our late author chose the aforementioned excellent ancient monument for his continuous theme, since, as so beautifully explained in his Annulo Platonis, the latter may be considered to be a real, thorough commentary concerning the Smegadenin Tefel. In order to be able to have this theme of Ariadne always in front of your eyes, dear and honourable brothers, and so that the rules of our author may be checked in that regard, I will place it here in the German language, and for the pleasure of scholars, in the Phoenician language in which the original has been written. If we renounce to publish the Smegadenin Tafel, which had the high respect of all alchemists and natural scientists since the 13th century, we are doing it because it is incomprehensible in its lapidary shortness. It would take extensive explanation, and the ideas, anyway, are expressed in the Aurea Cantina Homeri. Just who is the writer of the preface, using the name Phlebaron, is not known. We know, however, that the two more recent Berliner Rosenkreuzen Julen 1707-1768 and John Christopher Wulner 1732-1800 have obtained the 1781 edition. The latter was then read widely and interpreted also, especially in the Hamburg Rosenkreuz circle.
You are listening to Alchemy Pod, ramsdigital.com, sponsored podcast.
Comments. This Platonic ring is clearly and most instructively interpreted in the verses on the following page and in the whole work itself. It would appear that Plato borrowed it from Pythagorean natural science, which, except for some basic erroneous concepts of his successors, who surely did not derive from Pythagoras, agrees with the Mosaic and Pythagorean philosophy. Robert Flood and Henrik Cornelius Agrippa, aside from a few minor incorrect phrases, have proved this very well indeed. The three books on occult philosophy, De Philosophia Occulta, of the latter are quite good and have been deemed worthy enough to warrant translation into the French language. They contain an explanation and an enlargement of Pythagorean philosophy and of the Kabbalah. Agrippa's principal tenet is to the effect that in nature there exists a certain connection and common characteristic in occult forces. These cause a superior force to shoot out its rays through its inferior magnets in a continuous cycle, extending to the lowest of creatures, and vice versa, the inferior, by a corresponding attraction, can rise to the utmost through an ascending scale. That is the reason why, he said, he is a true Magnus, who uses the thing that lie manifest before one's eyes as if they were so many magnets intended for the attraction of the occult forces. Explanation of the figure, the double, volatile, and fixed abyss. One abyss, deep, calls forth another. Together they form a hard banquet. The volatile must become quite fixed. Steam and water must turn into earth. Heaven itself must be earthly, or else no life will enter the earth. The highest must become the lowest again the highest. The fixed must become quite volatile. Water and steam must be the earth. The earth must fly high up to heaven. Heaven must creep into the center of the earth. Thus, heaven and earth must be reversed, if the lowest is to become the highest. The volatile dragon kills the fixed forces of the volatile into death. Thus must stand revealed the quintessence and what it can do. Of course, our modern poets would say the wonderful things contained in these two explanations in a more beautiful and poetically correct manner, especially if a perspective recognition would tune their lyres up to these high truths. We have more than one reason, however, for printing these verses in their entire old-time format. Physico-chemical explanation of the origin, preservation, and destruction of nature by an association of true natural scientists, revised and published with many important annotations by Anton Joseph Kirchwinger, 2nd edition, literal and true to the original Rare Rosicrucian edition in 1781, illustrated, Berlin, 1921. Explanation of the Annali Platonis, or the Golden Chain of Homer. The chain of Homer is proved thus. After the chaos pulls asunder, a volatile spirit must forge it. Spiritus Mundi is its name. Frost, dew, snow, rain, and everything from above are betrothed to it in faithful company. Here is contained the volatile seed of the world, from the upper realms, where it falls into the lower, from that it takes on a body, when it glows visibly before our eyes. Nitrum is known to the whole world. Who is there to tell all his power? It is he that can forge many a thing. To him the lower realm is subject, neither can the upper dispense with him. He must give birth to the whole of nature. He is the father of all things, who can conquer the fortresses of the world. His power has been given him by the Creator. His realm is over heaven, earth, and the sea. Adam he is in all things. Out of him Eve must also spring. Then the goal will be reached when the whole earth becomes fertile. When he becomes fixed and no longer flashes, and Eve sits next to him, sun, moon, the sea, and the earth turn him to Eve through constant motion. Through heat and cold, through constant movement of the sea, with Adam rises Eve, who is called common salt and alkali, who feeds the children of the whole world with her blood, who, when man and women get together, a perfect fruit will be forged from them, for the sour and the alkali salt give the fat to every soup. This is proved by the volatile realm of the animals, not volatile, not fixed, note well. The vegetable hermaphrodite also shows of what it is forged. The fixed ores and stones give evidence that they are proper or belong to nitre and salt. Fire and air, water and earth, desire of it the active part, when now the noble world seed has been made fixed. Steam and water have also been brought to earth, then is made and also accomplished that which all the world esteems most highly. Fixed must the volatile become, out of water and steam turn to earth, and then it becomes a red, dry blood. It is the world's treasure and highest good, a perfect perfection which drives away all poverty and disease. Foreword. Very worthy, dear brothers, again a Rosicrucian publication. Many a profane scholar will say, together with the unwelcome critic who has inserted in the select library of modern literature a very nonsensical yet at the same time rather coarse review of the Blumenbach influence on all our writings. Just, however, as this censor has been found too light on the scale of reason, upon which we have been used for several hundred years to weigh the true as well as the sham scholars, to make it worth our while to reply to him, just so an identical fate will await those who are on his side. I therefore come to the point and present to you, very worthy brothers, a work which is considered by our high superiors a classical principal textbook, and has been prescribed chiefly to the disciplines of the lower classes as a basis for the said science of nature. This is due to its inner worth, and because it elucidates clearly and distinctly, theoretically as well as practically, our real principles of the true science of nature, which have been distorted by many writers of former and modern times. And indeed, whoever considers how many errors have crept into this study over a period of time will himself become convinced that all of the public will have good cause for being grateful to us for trying to make books no longer available in bookstores, accessible to the general public through new editions. Among these we count, with perfect justification, the present work on the true and genuine natural philosophy, tested by the most certain experiments. The author, who is resting in God, was called Herwood von Forsenbrunn. He was a teacher of medicine at Crommen and a country physician in Moravia, also a worthy member of our secret fraternity, in which he bore the name of Homerus. In this work he shows with such conclusive arguments the right origin of all things in the universal world spirit, so much decried and so much hated by moderns, that those who do not approve of these purified principles entertain themselves in their blindness. To a flexible man eager to learn, however, that light will shine to him here which he would seek in vain in other philosophical books. For the majority of sages contradict one another in their various systems in a wonderful way. Many moderns do not wish to hear anything about spiritual essences, but wish to explain everything by the laws of mechanical motion. That is why most of them stop at an artificial nature. Others, however, who recognize the unreasonableness of such a system, prefer to stick to the tasteless scholastic blues instead of renouncing the prejudices they suckled in during their youth and becoming prisoners of truth. Yet such people should just read the first chapter of the book of creation with impartial eyes and should not try to be smarter than Moses, the natural scientist illuminated by God. They should let themselves be told that which they wished he would say according to their darkened brain, and they would change their minds. They should only, I say, look at men and animals. Yes, consider well all trees, flowers, herbs, stones, and minerals. Know how to dissect their parts in the manner prescribed by the author and in our wisdom schools, and they will find, not without great astonishment, the universal world spirit, which some of our philosophers, such as the first and oldest among all, know and understand very well. In short, everything one sees, everything that lives and grows, is produced by fruitful nature. Yes, the most genuine and firmest subterranean creatures are filled with spirit by the great world spirit, or as our brother Homer expressed it, everything and each, stone, skin, and leg, whatever there is in every mineral, is coagulated and fixed spirit of the world of life, and filled with it. Otherwise it would be impossible that life, rain, and motion could be a nature. For this spirit is the direct cause of composition and augmentation of human beings, animals, plants, and ores, yes, in every single thing. He can rightly be called the spirit of the Almighty Architect, the creator controlling the world, the overseer of all things, the beginning of all offspring, which proceeds and is created by the greatest Jehovah as the right fiat. The spirit unified in itself which constitutes nature in her upper and lower levels, the right anima mundi by which everything lives and works, the right mercurius vitae without which no man, animal or plant can live, the living water into which enters the upper light with its crystalline water, by means of which the body, that is, the nethermost water, is illumined and transfigured, and its previously crushed, as it were, dead life is resurrected. It has its seat in the upper realms of Shamajin, where, in its first descent, it condensed into that nature which is called the chaotic water by the sages. This is the first chasing and lodging of the plastic world soul, or of that great assistant overseer of God, which the old Platonists called the generating nature, natura genitrix. Now then, this chaotic water, the more it sinks through the coarser ranges of the air and approaches our earthly realm, the more it takes on a yet more compact degree of condensation due to its astral influences. After it has helped the animals and vegetable realms to nourish and growth, it proceeds to the area of the subterranean Pluto, producing there the minerals and metals which the assistants of the fire in the center of the terrestrial globe. However, even if the said bodies take their origin from this general procreative father, they have been marred by their infected salty maternal places, by a certain damaging chaotic corrosive which is against human nature, and which has been most strongly woven into their substance by the aforementioned central fire. Yet it can, by the guidance so sweetened and revealed by our Homer in the practical part of his work, be freed of this spot, transformed into the sweetness of sugar, and made acceptable for products of the three natural realms. Behold, very worthy dear brothers, the first and theoretical part of the Annali Platonis, which is based on reason and experience, supported by the approbation of the divine holy scripture, and transmitted to the Egyptians by our forefathers, brought by these to all peoples and their secret fraternities, and still taught there. Among the said patriarchal forefathers, our thrice great Hermes is shining like the sun amongst the stars in his emerald tablet, which is rightly considered by us the noblest of our philosophical symbolic books, and, so to speak, the Bible of Hermetic philosophy. He has laid down the said systems of true natural science so thoroughly and instructively in such a small space that he is in complete accord with unfathomable principles of the most excellent of all teachers of natural science who ever lived on earth, Moses, I mean. That is also the reason why our deceased author chose the said age-old monument in his constant guide and explained it so well in his Annali Platonis that it can be considered a thoroughgoing commentary of the Emerald Tablet. To enable our very worthy dear brothers to bear this gilding thread of Ariadne constantly before their mind's eye, to test the tenet of our author thereby, as well as to recognize themselves unreasonableness with which one idle talkers have endeavoured to cast suspicion on this so precious document of ancient days as an interpolated product of more recent times, I am producing it here in German. But for the sake of scholars of the Phoenician language in which it had originally been written, it is true and no lie, certain and truest of all, that that which is below is like that which is above, and that which is above is like that which is below, whereby the wonder signs of a thing can be obtained. And just as all things are created by one alone, by the will of the only one who thought of it before, so also all things originate from the only one being by appropriation. The sun is its father, the moon its mother, the wind has carried it in its belly. Its nurse is the earth. This is the father of all perfection in the whole world. His power is totally when he is transformed into earth. You must separate the earth from the fire from the crude, gently with great understanding. He ascends from the earth up to heaven and descends again from heaven to the earth and receives the power of the upper and the lower. When you have achieved this, you will possess the splendor of the whole world, and all darkness will fly from you. This is the strongest strength of all strength, for it overcomes all subtle and volatile things, and penetrates that which is crude. Thus the world is created, and by means of this one thing the most wonderful works are accomplished. That is why I have been called the thrice great Hermes, because I possess three parts of the truth. Everything I have said by the work of the sun has been fulfilled. that the said incomprehensible monument of Egyptian wisdom was originally written by the Phoenician language, the real mother tongue of the ancient Hamites, cannot be doubted if one admits, as one must admit, that its author was the second Hermes, who lived at a time when no syllable was yet known of the Egyptian dialect, the oldest daughter of the said language, which those who peopled the still uninhabitable Egypt under Menes brought with them into the country. It is precisely this fact that Kriegsmann proved this good argument in his commentary on the subject. There is just as little reason for doubting that the said emerald tablet is the very oldest document we possess in the said language. It is quite ridiculous, therefore, that a certain Jael ab Indini is not ashamed of contesting such high antiquity in view of the fact that the learned Jesuit Athanasius Kircher, who was no friend of high alchemy, Petrus Lambicus, Claus Borrichius, yes, even the distiller Herr H.G. Berhard admitted, and that the latter even grants this Tabula Smegdina as the very oldest and perhaps truest document derived from Hermes, be he who he may. Although according to the atomic mechanical tenets he has absorbed from his youth, he does not perceive the universal plastic great spirit of nature shown so clearly in it. It is just as ridiculous for the aforementioned Ab Indini to ascribe this age-old work to the labor of a Latin author because, he says, the affected inscription Visitus Interiora Terra is proof of it, which is certainly a noble argument. Whether it had really been engraved in an emerald big enough to hold the said writing, or is only called so as a simile, I do not wish to become involved in a learned catfight about this with him. Nevertheless, it is not so unbelievable that persons who know the art that Hermes had known could produce such a big gem, but that he considers the said tablet suspect of its contents confused. I cannot pardon him, especially as otherwise he produces much good in his spare time, and from time to time does not show unsuitable argument in this kind of scholarship, so that he does not seem to lack anything except that he has not studied in our Academy of Wisdom. No fewer contradictions are found among scholars regarding the time at which Hermes lived. Some even consider him a chimera, asserting that he had never been on earth. Chief among these is Johannes Heinrich Ursinus. The above-mentioned Ab Indini would like to make out that he was Moses, although the latter lived shortly after the flood, that is, in the second millennium, while this one only lived in the fourth. The most ridiculous, however, that the author of Fame Remisia ad Phaedrus Rosa et Aureus Crucis tries to aver that Hermes was a Greek and king of Athens, although not one among the true scholars, agrees with this option. In order not to expedite too much, however, I will only note here that our philosophical apprentices would derive great benefit from considering the tablet of Hermes with its beautiful commentary by Hortinalis, together with our Analo Platonis. The second or practical part of the work we have on hand is not less worthy of consideration than the preceding theoretical, for just as in the first part the author writes with the greatest thoroughness and clarity about the generation of things as a whole, he deals in this second part with their corruption and natural analysis. In it, the true rebirth of the chaotic water, and especially its astral offspring, are palpably shown, as also how to achieve it without separation of the leaven by a total volatilization of all components of these bodies. From this latter procedure arise our so useful menstrua radicalis of the three kingdoms of nature, which are able to soften, volatilize, and again make fixed every created body of their line, and to transform it into a potent medicine for men and metals. But because the creatures of the subterranean kingdom have absorbed a corrosive injurious to human nature, an acaustic being, our author teaches in chapter 10 how to soften, tame, and transform this poison into a honey-sweet medicine, salubrious for the animal body. If our brother Homerus had done nothing more than show this and teach the pertinent guides to sweetening, we would owe him our deepest gratitude even after his demise. Finally, in the 11th and last chapter, he comes to the so much taunted alkahest, or alkaest. Some consider this famous liqueur a very simple substance, supposed to dissolve both sour and alkaline subjects, and that without any corrosive and any weakening of its virgin purity, by what Irenaeus, Philalethea, Starkey, and other brother Belmont writes about it, we may infer that it must be made of urinous or urinary salt. I do not wish to go into any detail how far its boasted virtues are founded or unfounded, or whether it can be compared to the fifth element or the volatile spirit of Mercurius of the ancient sages, which is precisely what Basilius Valentinus and others are praising. In one of his unpublished writings, our author maintains that the effect of the Helmontian alkahest can be proved by other menstrua. He calls these hermaphroditic ones, and says that they united without resistance with both the acidus and the alkalicus, that they augmented thereby without precipitation, and that they are a neuter between the acid and the urinary. Regarding the most noble marcasite, various hermaphroditic solvents and preparations of this blessed mineral will be found in our annotations, which we recommend to all pharmaceutical alchemists in true, sincere love of humanity. We have yet to say something about the third part of this Annali Platinonis. There exists of it three kinds of editions, which have been added to the printing of the first two parts in three different versions. But since none of these is authentic, and all have been wrongly ascribed to our Homer, we have thought it fit to print none of them and to omit the third part altogether. Finally, the importance of this little work does not require any recommendation. It is, nonetheless, indispensable to those who wish to work intelligently in the branch covered by it. Heretofore, there have arisen complaints about all previous editions by various readers, also by some new brothers, that is, by those who do not wish to know the Latin language. They are left with some doubts due to this lack of knowledge, or they must be in doubt, as Latin scraps which they do not understand occur on almost all pages, and they wonder if they have been correctly translated. All, however, are disguised with the Moravian German manner of writing of the author. They regret that it is so tiring that many a reader must force himself not to put the book down midway and undertake something else. This is especially as, in addition, there are obscure passages here and there, which no beginner can easily understand. That is why, for the benefit of our younger students, an effort has been made to meet these complaints, to clarify the obscure passages by explicit annotations, to accurately replace the Latin text and single words by German terms, and in general to make the whole work clearer, easier, and more usable. Therefore, very worthy dear brothers, use this exceedingly serviceable tractant to the honour and praise of the lovable, honourable Creator of beautiful nature, for your own instruction and the comforting of your needy fellow man. To which end we devoutly recommend you to the blessing grace of heaven with the power of the Spirit, and remain through the sacred number in unalterable faithfulness and brotherly love, with our usual Christian fraternal wish. Flibrocheron.
Alchemy Pod, your essential source of alchemy laboratory instructions. Listen to alchemical papers, articles, and books on the topic of alchemy. Alchemy Pod is the first alchemy podcast on the internet, featuring titles from the Restorers of Alchemical Manuscript Society, RAMS, Digital Library, and more. Sponsored by www.ramsdigital.com.